It was intended for the human to support the machine to support the human at work.
And AI means something different to anybody you talk to, which is wild.
This is AI or die.
Well, gang, episode 20. We're back. Last episode of the year. Very exciting. Reagan, Brendan, good to see you guys again. Happy end of 2024. Hope you're doing well. And listeners out there, this is officially episode 20. We are no longer podcast newbies. We are doing this long form, and we're looking forward to 2025 and many more episodes to come. Today's episode is going to be more of a special episode, it being the end of the year, it being our hallmark 20th episode. So we're going to do a little bit of 2024 recap, looking into some of our favorite episodes and guests and topics and just how the world of AI has evolved in the past year. And looking ahead to 2025, what are some predictions that we have? I think we already have some signals that we're seeing in enterprises around how they're thinking about AI and really rolling it out to scale, really driving adoption and governance continued in 2025 as well. So good to see you all again. Happy to be in. We're going to start obviously with personalized. What's going on? Reagan, how are you? What's new with you and your life?
Good. Finally settling in after all the travel, back in town, just prepping for Christmas. Got all of my gifts wrapped.
Nice.
Last night. Well, most of them. Still have a few more to go. It's like my favorite part of Christmas.
Yeah. You did a lot of travel in the past month. So I'm happy you're finally like settling in and like ready for the holidays. Yeah.
Yep. It was great, but I'm glad to be home. I was out in San Francisco for Brainstorm AI. That's hosted by Fortune. Super fun. Lots of incredible speakers. Lots of good topics. If you want to check out any of my notes from that conference, you can go to my X account at Reagan Bliley. And I took rapid notes on my phone during each session. It was fantastic. And then posted them immediately afterwards, tagged a bunch of the speakers. So you can give them a follow if you want. OpenAI did a really cool demo with Sora and a bunch of the kind of like videoed audio to, you know, breaking down videos into frames, into pictures, and then transcribing what's in the image, and then creating voiceovers and stitching it all back together. It was like really neat. I know a few of the folks at my table were recording it. I did not record it, but it was really cool. So just seeing that and kind of being in that room was super fun. 2 years ago when I was there, first time I went, it was right after ChatGPT launched. And it was just a really cool time to be in that room with those types of incredible people. So yeah, it was great. It was super fun. Glad I went. We'll definitely go again. Got to catch up with a lot of good friends and glad to be home.
Cool. You're kind of like live tweeting these events as they go. I always, whenever I go to those events, I notice how everybody, there's a certain type of person that always pulls their phone out and takes a picture of every single slide that's shown and just has like a library of all images on their phone.
Where it's totally. Like, well, like, yeah, you can't even say live tweeting anymore. So when I posted about it, I was like, I'm going to be live X posting. Like, I don't know how to say this.
Yeah. Cross posting, X posting. But yeah, that's cool. And then on the setup for the holidays, are you a real Christmas tree, fake Christmas tree household? What's your guys' setup?
This is our first year getting a real Christmas tree. I had some as a kid, but as an adult, I've always had a fake tree. And we have this massive fake tree. And I used to put it up every year, but then we moved, we bought this home, and the ceilings are not as high. So we were like, you know what, this is a good opportunity to go get a real tree.
Yeah.
So we went to this local nursery, got a smaller but real tree. It took me 2 seconds to decorate it. Like the other one would take me hours because it was so big.
Yeah.
And this one was like 10 minutes. It was so fast. I was like, this is great.
Now I'm kind of kicking myself. I'm sure there's like a Santa agent out there. Because when you were a kid, you wrote letters to Santa. Or like, I don't know, some people had like Santa call the kids or something like that. I wonder if there's like a Santa agent that kids are like chatting with this year, just telling them all the things that they want.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, if you went to, if you've done voice lately on ChatGPT's app, it defaults to the Santa voice.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Nice. Hey, Brandon, how you doing, man? What's new in your life?
It's good. I just like this time of year, not only for the holidays, but also like the new year. I think it's just like great. So I'm pretty excited. A little bit of rest and relaxation the next couple of weeks. We're going to Istanbul and then Paris for New Year's. So I'm doing a little bit of European travel. So pretty excited for that. And then just going to be chilling for a bit. And then I always like January. I think it's one of the best times of the year work-wise because everybody's pretty excited for what's coming up for the rest of the year. And I just feel like it's nice to have that kind of excitement and energy going into what we're doing for the following year. So it's always a good time.
And I call me an optimist, but I feel like 2025 will be a really exciting year. I feel like a lot of people are getting a lot more budget now for AI and Gen AI. People are a lot more teed up for good projects and like setting the strategy with AI at its core. A lot of boards and companies are talking about AI governance and AI adoption as well too. So yeah, it should be an exciting year.
I feel like the tech is there too now, like in the organizations, right? I feel like everybody we go to, they've got Databricks, Dataiku, like they've got something, they've got a couple reps at it too, where it's not like unlocking, because I feel like we're doing a lot of unlocking work in the last couple of years here.
Yeah.
But now I feel like everybody we go into, they're tweaking and optimizing the stack or adding to it rather than kind of establishing it. So I feel like there's a lot of good technical meat kind of underneath these projects that are going to be coming up here. So I think that's where it gets really exciting, especially the stuff we do, because then it becomes like, what do people need? How do we build it for them? How do we make sure it's aligned to their expectations and their kind of like goals? So I think that's when it's going to get really exciting next year.
That's a good call. Yeah, I did notice there was a lot of stack build in 2024 in terms of like prepping for things like MLOps and AIOps in that way too. I'm also jealous that you get winter markets whenever, I'm sure when you travel, like Columbus in Ohio, there isn't a lot of like big winter markets, even in like German Village here in Columbus. So I'm jealous. I'm sure you'll have some really cool ones to go to.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because like some people I know here, they'll travel to like Germany and France. Like that's kind of like a destination trip that they do, is just for the markets, like especially in Germany and like the French German border, I guess, is like a really hot spot for it. So I hear a lot of people that are flying over there the next like couple weeks here just to like see them. So pretty excited to go to Paris and see what that looks like too.
Yeah, even when I was in Seattle, there was a town called Leavenworth in the mountains that like modeled after a classic German mountain town. And they had like the winter kind of festivities all happening throughout the wintertime as well too. Ice sculptures and lights and all that other stuff too. So it'll be nice.
What about you, Nick?
Let's see, what is new? You know me, this time of year, I always get into like wanting to set up some sort of home renovation in my house. So last year I was working on the basement. If you guys listen back to episode 11, I was all about like refinishing my basement. This year, I just went and got some paint thinner and I'm starting to refinish my sunroom. So there's like cedar siding in the sunroom and getting all that paint off and turning it into an office. I'm going to create an office for myself in 2025.
So you're going to insulate it?
I'm going to insulate it. I'm going to do what I can, because right now it's like, guys, it's like a three seasons room. Like it's there's breezes coming in. Like it's not temperature controlled in any way. So trying to set that up, going to do a little bit of that. And yeah, just reflecting on this year too, it's like this whole AI operating model, this whole people talking about the operational gains from AI solutions actually getting deployed. And I feel like I agree with Brendan. There's been a lot of like build and prep. It seems like for 2025, that's been building in 2024. And it just feels like, yeah, January and February and March are going to be really exciting. Just talking to teams about their strategy and really like hitting the ground running with solutions working through all the way to production, as opposed to starting with like daydreaming what kind of use cases we could do. It feels much more tactical now, which is exciting too. But yeah, that's it for me. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just hanging out, visiting family, things like that. So yeah, that's me. So for this episode, I wanted to get into with you guys some of the favorite kind of moments and guests that we've had, or just things that have, you know, jumped out to you. I know, Brendan, you started to get into trends that you've already noticed in 2024. Other 2024 reflections. I remember our first episode of the year with Cal, we talked about 2024 was going to be all about AI going into operations, and that kind of happened. And I think that'll continue in 2025. What are some other reflections that you guys had? Reagan, I'll start with you, just around like highlights from 2024 that you noticed of like the progression of AI in the enterprise and like it becoming really critical to operations. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's so interesting is we all want to like blanket statement these advances across different companies, but sometimes I think most people forget that there's really a staggering effect of a lot of these enterprises within their journey for AI. For example, we've got some customers who are going to production and prepping for production and getting ready there. And then others who are still trying to figure out what their very first use case is going to be. And trying to even get enough budget to start doing experimentation and running really, really light experiments. So it is still a huge range. And I feel like it comes down to this like cultural crux of whether or not there's executive buy-in, sponsorship, you know, for these enterprises to actually get enough money to do something and get enough attention and priority to do something. You just go into some of these companies that have so much opportunity and they're kind of just sitting on their hands. And it's not a technology problem. There's plenty of technology to use and get started with pretty quickly and show value. It's just getting attention from people and getting priority. And it still hasn't seemed to trickle its way into some of these companies. Whereas, again, you've got some extremely advanced organizations who have moved really quick and have the talent internally to make it get it done and have established the right partnerships with other companies as well. So it's just kind of fascinating. There's still a massive kind of variation when we go into companies. That's been one of my major observations. It's kind of cool to see what the leading edge is doing and how far we're advancing on the leading edge.
Yeah.
But I also think it's really interesting to see what the distribution looks like of companies and where they're at. You know, you kind of hinted at the operating model piece. It's like, where are people in their maturity of getting something over the finish line? Mm-hmm. So that's been the biggest observation for me. I also think the rise of AI agents is now this big thing that everybody's going to need to figure out. And what I think it's fascinating about that is there's a lot of automation that happens in these agentic frameworks. And I think companies are still really concerned about what the non-agentic, you know, AI systems look like. Even just co-pilots are struggling with co-pilots and getting adoption and training people to use them. So that'll be a really fascinating thing to see for next year, is just how fast can these organizations frame up the right ecosystem to start experimenting with agents and introducing those into their environment.
It's about that collaboration between the business and technical teams. And I wonder if the promise of AI agents is it's more integrated in your work, like agents embedded inside of Slack or inside of Teams, or like you're just supporting so you don't feel like you have to go to five different apps to accommodate a specific workflow that you're working through on the business side of things. Like, do you think that's...
Yeah, what I find interesting is like people still have a hard time, A, understanding what that is, and B, figuring out how to design something that would work. Yeah. Like, if you gave any random business person an automation tool, they would still struggle a little bit to like think of all the edge cases and think of all the ways that it could go wrong and think of all the ways to tweak it and think of all the data that they would need to feed it. You know, like there's all of these elements that are just... They don't just happen. I think everyone wants to pretend like these systems just like work, and it's not true. You know, there's some thought that goes into it. I mean, think about hiring someone. There's a lot of thought that goes into what kind of role do we need right now? What sort of tasks are they going to be responsible to do? What kind of information do we need to curate during their onboarding process? How do we measure whether or not they're doing well in their job? Like, there's a lot that goes into hiring a person. Now imagine trying to do that with a digital system, right? It's like, it's very hard. And that's not going to go away. So I just keep coming back to that. There's always this human element to it that is hard and will continue to be hard. And the technology will make it a little easier, but it's still going to be a creative and design endeavor.
Yeah. In reality, a lot of these teams are having to go to the whiteboard and literally visualize the process still. So like that process design and that layout of the steps that happen in the workflow are still so prominent as we're thinking about solutions like AI agents. And it seems like that plus the data quality foundation and like the ability to have data serve and support this is still foundational. This has been continuous year over year to really enable these stuff. Yeah. Brendan, what did you notice as like key reflections or things that really emerged this year as like key trends of what enterprises were focusing on?
Yeah, I think in my own kind of personal life and use of AI, I feel like it's becoming so standard to use ChatGPT for like searching for stuff or knowledge kind of based work, and then Claude for generating content or writing. So I feel like what I'm seeing in myself is also starting to happen in the enterprise too, where now that Microsoft Copilot or some version of kind of open-ended LLM is available, people are starting to use it more often. Like I'm on a troubleshooting call. We get an error message and somebody puts that in and then they resolve it. They're live on the call. So I think we're starting to get to the point where that's becoming more commonplace. Again, organizations are at different parts of that journey for sure. But I think that's a very exciting piece, is just now that we're more familiar with it. And there's such a natural benefit to that when we look at building more customized apps, agents, things like that for the user to understand generally how the LLMs will work and what they're good at. So I think that's going to really help a lot of the more product development kind of orientation with AI. And I think that's also why teams are starting to focus on the operating model, because now they're looking at like, how do we use our data, our unique way of working, and turn it into more of a scalable application, something that's embedded in their process, in their workflow, that creates more value. And you mentioned the data quality piece. Like, I think that's going to be a really hot thing. And there's another other, like a lot of other operational challenges, right? Because there's the MLOps piece of how do we put this in prod? How does it run in prod? And then there's just like the operational framework that goes around this of like, you know, I was on a call yesterday and it's like, models going to prod. Who's supporting it in production, right? Like, what's the support plan? Like, we built this thing. Who's going to handle it? It's like, well, there's a platform team, some MLOps teams, but like, are they getting, which things do they respond to? What does the data scientist respond to? So we're getting into a lot of those kind of practical things where like the tooling is there, but now we need to like put the organizational structure around the tooling to make sure that people have what they need out of it. So I think that's going to continue. And then I do think, I'm hoping towards the end of next year, teams are taking what they've done internally and then start thinking about like external facing AI solutions, right? Like we can see it more and more in like the tech natives, the Amazons, folks like that, where they're leveraging this really heavily. So I'm hoping towards the end of the year, we start kind of thinking about how do we externalize and make some of this functionality available outside of our organization. That's a big, scary leap, but I hope people start kind of moving towards that edge, because I think that's where a lot of really big value will come. And again, teams will get there at different times, but I think that's going to be a really exciting phase of AI.
That reminds me, there was a team we were working with where it's pretty common. It's such a gray area still for the post-deployment monitoring feedback mechanisms that we set up, like how we're going to actually operationalize that part is still kind of a big question mark for a lot of teams that we talk with, where they're working through getting the use cases through testing and like setting up the end user design. But that whole monitoring motion and how to scale the monitoring of multiple solutions that are deployed is still kind of open for a lot of teams that we're working with that aren't necessarily really immature, but just haven't gotten there yet. I also think about how a lot of talks this year, and just it went from in 2023, it was like, hey, who here has used ChatGPT? A couple hands raised. But like in 2024, it was like, when I build this presentation, I use ChatGPT for this, Perplexity for that, Notebook LM for this, you know, a dozen plus different pointed solutions to address an overarching workflow. And I'm very curious about that consolidation and would love your guys' feedback around. It seems like there's all these different pointed solutions that are out there. How do we see that continuing? Especially, how do we see that going into the enterprise with all of the extra security and governance requirements that are within there as well? Like a further consolidation, or do we see much more pointed solutions in that way? I don't know. What would you guys think? How do you guys think this will merge in the next year?
Funny topic. When I was at ODSC West in San Francisco, Chip Wen, who's a friend of the pod and friend of the company, who's an incredible individual. You should look her up. She also just dropped a book called AI Engineering, and it was like one of the top O'Reilly books when she dropped it. So it was pretty incredible. But she was one of the like keynote speakers of the conference, and she went up on stage and it was like a more technical topic. It was like, you know, talking about AI engineering and how is that different from your traditional MLOps. And so she was kind of going through the different architectures and she was going through the different design paradigms. And so it's a technical crowd, right? It's essentially what I'm saying. And she started the talk saying, how many of you have heard of ChatGPT? And it was like, people just started laughing.
Yeah.
It was so good. So like, yeah. I know that's so silly, but I just think about that moment. Like, we're so beyond like, have you heard of it? Have you used it? I mean, that was all last year, but to think that was just a year ago. And now it's funny to say that out loud. I just thought that was absolutely hilarious. So I think to your point though, like there's so many different tools and people are trying to use so many different tools. What consumers are getting right now is just price cost fatigue, right? Because you're paying for all the different tools that you're using. And like ChatGPT just came out with a $200 per month license, you know, so there's cost fatigue happening and probably some level of consolidation into one. Although I'm a big user of several, like I like to switch between them for various reasons. I just find that some of them are better at certain tasks than others. But from the enterprise lens, you know, we all know that enterprises love to coalesce around a platform, right? Like one platform.
Yeah.
What we saw this year was like, oh, Microsoft 365 Copilot, Microsoft 365 Copilot, literally everywhere. And I think it was people's way of introducing AI in a seamless way to non-technical business users to get them hands-on, get them using it. And I gotta say, I know I've said this on several podcasts, I'm not trying to hate on Microsoft at all. It just is not nearly as good as any of the other AI solutions out there. And, you know, ChatGPT has their enterprise version. So does Perplexity. So does Claude, Anthropic and Claude. And I just feel like the companies that are doing the enterprise version of those tools are getting so much more out of that engagement than just starting with this Microsoft 365 Copilot and spending so much time trying to get adoption around it. You know, again, I'm not trying to diss Microsoft. I think they're doing a lot of incredible things. It's just, you know, I'm starting to see that when they're releasing products to the enterprise, they're just not delivering.
It seems like there's a lot of focus of reaching for use cases in 24, whereas like coming into 25 now, people are like, we know what our uses are for AI. Like we have some sets like use cases for things that we're looking for. So I think it's going to be less about trying to stretch AI solutions into workflows, but more about knowing your workflow and having an understanding of it. And then looking at like Salesforce, who's planning to roll out a whole next version of its AI agents in February. So they're hiring like 2,000 salespeople just to push all of its AI features inside of the new Salesforce functionality that's getting rolled out in February too. So I wonder if that'll continue. Like Salesforce, Epic, the big players in these enterprise software spaces really pushing for just come back, just stay inside of our app and all the AI features we have in there.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because I've seen a lot of backlash on LinkedIn about like, why does Salesforce need to hire so many people to sell it? Why can't like AI do it? And I just think it's such an interesting like insight into how we think about AI, because it's like, well, humans are still a lot better at tasks like relationship building that goes into sales, or like understanding your problems and being able to recommend solutions. Like, I think I saw a lot of that kind of chatter on LinkedIn. I thought that was kind of laugh to myself because I was like, oh, I feel like that's a very idyllic version of like how you would think about AI, when really what we're seeing in the trenches, at least from what I'm seeing, is like it's a lot more human in the loop, like augmenting humans, making decisions or enhancing what they're doing today. Like, we're still not in this full autonomous. I think even the agentic stuff will be heavy human in the loop with agents behind, like in the background of this task. So
yeah, I just thought that was funny. Another point to that too, I took my first Waymo ride in San Francisco, and let me tell you how giddy I was to take a driverless car around the city. It was so much fun. But what I learned is there's a driver remotely, you know, assigned to the vehicle when you get in. And so if they need to override anything or need to do anything, they can. And so to your point, Brendan, it's like, We're still, even in those cases where there's so much money being poured into trying to do it fully autonomous, The complexity of the world and everything else still requires an element of human intervention. So it's really interesting. I think there's a lot of cases to be made for low complex tasks to start automating those with AI, but yeah, super interesting.
Human in the loop was another one of those terms that was pretty popular in the past year. Just talking about solutions getting deployed, making sure that humans are in the loop, thinking about the end users. It seems like there was quite the focus on internal associates, AI facing solutions for internal associates versus customer facing. I wonder if 2025 will bring many more customer facing. Like, I was with my wife last night in the car. There was a transaction through Venmo that she needed to get pulled back, but she wasn't able to do it because it went through. And she was like, should I chat with the AI agent about like getting my transaction fixed, or should I just like call them or something? But I think that's one of the companies that are, you know, at the forefront of it. But I think more and more we'll start doing that kind of customer facing AI agents in 2025. I mean, it seems like we're really teed up for it. And a lot of governance framework has been set up to try and support that as well.
Yeah. And I do find like there's kind of a shift in user expectations as you use ChatGPT a lot, because like, we've been working in the paradigm of basically a form and a database, right? Like, that's been the primary internet phenomenon, SaaS, whatever. But when you start using something like ChatGPT, like, it can understand context so much better. So you don't need to like navigate the page. You just say like, hey, give me this stuff. So I do find that like in certain applications where I can do that, it's really nice because I don't need to like search an FAQ or like Google around with the name and the website and try to like find it in their page tree or whatever. I can just be like, give me my information. So I wonder like if they'll start feeling more pressure from the users too of like, hey, we kind of expect this because Amazon's doing it when I was over there. So like, hey, where is this? Am I in next e-commerce site? Like, where is this stuff? You know, I think that might become more and more table stakes rather than like differentiation in the next couple of years here.
It's like knowledge management was that number one use case that enterprises across industries were working on, just like internal employee facing knowledge management of all of the information we have to help with onboarding associates or even very pointed solutions within departments and teams. I think that'll keep going.
Yeah, I quite like the embedded AI little bubbles, honestly. I think they're really helpful. I did find myself, I was like Googling something health related and I'm like, do I want to use AI to like get results about health specific things, you know, like higher risk type of scenarios? I find myself get like feeling like, no, don't use AI, use Google. But even then it's like, you could still Google stuff and get the wrong answer. So it's a weird kind of visceral reaction to something that's like higher stakes, you know?
Healthcare is really, oh, go ahead, B.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why I think it's brilliant that like ChatGPT now has the internet search one so they can point to sources, like the Perplexity kind of approach too, because that just, it's like Wikipedia, right? With the sources at the bottom of the Wikipedia page, like you can actually trust because you know where it came from, right? Sorry, Nick, go ahead though.
I was just saying healthcare is really caught up in 24 as well, like hiring data scientists and like building their teams internally to support that stuff as well too. I think there's a lot of excitement around what it could do, but obviously that caution when we're talking about human life and obviously patient care in that way as well. But already things like listening into doctor's appointments and like supporting the healthcare in that way, I think it's exciting. And I think we'll see a lot more in 25 as well. You know what I haven't heard in a while, guys, is the, what is that? Kind of like a doomsday clock to AGI, like how close we are to AGI. Has that really shifted in 24 at all? Like, have you guys heard anything recently around like, oh, we're this much closer to artificial general intelligence. Like it's coming. It's within 2 years now instead of 5 years or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it was two episodes ago, or maybe it was last episode, I had mentioned that that new podcast episode had dropped on Lex Fridman with the CEO of Anthropic. And yeah, and so, yeah, he goes into that quite a bit. But I think the general consensus is like a year to 2 years away from AGI, which is kind of wild.
Year to 2 years, so maybe 25, we'll see something come up there. That's interesting. I mean, very curious to see what that'll happen, especially in the enterprise space too, because it seems like I'm talking about it in two different ways, guys. Let me know if I should think about it differently. But like, there's the consumer facing AI, and then there's this enterprise AI, which has so many more requirements built in order to deploy it there, that it just seems like it's always trying to play catch up with the consumer space. I guess pretty common with any sort of software. Yeah.
The way I kind of think about this is that, like, let's say you're an enterprise and you want to bring in an expert on something. You're going to go find a very reputable firm with people who have credentials who can answer those very, very complex questions for you. You'll bring outsiders in to like help augment the expertise inside of your organization. I think right now, enterprises are struggling to go through the validation process that those quote experts, like you would with humans, when you actually evaluate a human, like, give me all of your references and, you know, give me some of the people I can call that you've worked with before that had success with you, right? Like, we do that with consultants, we do that with experts when we bring them in. I think the models are going to be the same kind of idea, right? These kind of like domain experts in different areas. And how do companies vet the quality of that thing that they can then use and leverage with their internal information? And when you think about onboarding that consultant, you know, getting onboarded to an enterprise is such a pain because you sometimes have to get a physical laptop. You got to get a virtual machine set up. You got your own email for that company. Then there's all sorts of access requirements around data you can access, and you can't move it outside of that environment. And so same thing with these models, right? Like, we've procured this one, we've evaluated this one, we want to use it as an expert. How do we make sure our data doesn't leave? How do we make sure, you know, and even with consultants, I always make this claim as well. They're learning patterns from all the different companies. They're anonymizing it to an extent in their brains, but then they're using it the next time that they go work with another company.
Yeah.
Now they're not taking your data, your files, and leveraging it because that's that would breach a contract, but they're still, they can't forget all the things they learned while it was there at your company. So I think it's so funny how people are thinking about AI so differently than when they think about working with Accenture. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That whole transformation will be really fascinating.
Yeah, I just think the AGI thing is interesting because it's like, it feels kind of like an arbitrary threshold in a way. I know it's important, but like it feels like because it's so smart in other ways, to say like, oh, is it as smart as like we're smart? Like we talked before, like can't count the R's in strawberry, but like it can build a code base from scratch, right? It can explain the Napoleonic Wars from many different angles, whatever. Like it has so much access to information. It's like kind of a definition of an intelligence thing almost to me at a point. But yeah, I do think it'll become very interesting as like the intelligence level goes up in decision making. And then I think we have a very interesting like human versus AI in decision making and like how do you measure quality of decision making and like, again, it can do things incorrectly, but it might be able to do things better than us. So I think it'll become interesting to see like how that plays out in the next couple of years here.
That context is fascinating. I hadn't thought about it that way around like, oh, we've had this model running at our company for 3 years now. Like it's been through our company evolution. Oh, but this model wasn't around before then. It's like that almost shared experience that the models have with us as humans and living with the company and continually learning with the company. That I think.
Yeah. And you know, it can look historically too much better than we can. Like when you hire someone and they're not going to read your entire knowledge base, like, but the AI system can. So yeah, I just think that the curation of information for these AI systems is going to be absolutely paramount. I did hear some different definitions around artificial intelligence, artificial general intelligence, and artificial super intelligence that I thought was pretty good. So like AI is better or as good as humans at a very particular capability, like one capability or several. And then AGI is as good as the average human at all capabilities. Could be like reasoning, creativity, novelty, whatever, like whatever capabilities of intelligence that we're measuring. And then ASI is it supersedes the best human at all capabilities. So I kind of liked that definition. I know it's squishy because like, what is a capability? What is an intelligent capability? And like, how do we measure that? And like, what's the average and who's the best? Like those types of things are very squishy. And that's why I think we don't know. But I think conceptually, it's nice to separate it out that way.
This is a really nerdy thing and we can cut this, but that's like similar to how they rank mutants inside of the X-Men universe is they go like the level that you're at is like compared to that, like the best human. So that's kind of funny to hear. Like it's like the same thing as comic book like superpowers as it is.
You have to keep that in.
ASI for the nerds, for the X-Men fans on the call, you know?
And you assume that like the timetable to achieve each of those, but then you start to wonder, how do you know when you reach it, right? It's not like we all come together and be like, oh, that's super. That finally beat us. Like, do we have
someone's going to make a stake in the ground? Like someone's going to make the claim and then other people are going to argue. And like, that's just what's going to be, you know, like we're not all going to come to consensus. You know, their competitors will launch a whole campaign around how it's not AGI and here's why. And I just think it's going to be a squishy thing that we'll never all have consensus on.
Yeah, it was like the Turing test. Like the Turing test had a similar, like there's like constant redefinition or trying to clarify definition of success and like who's actually beat it. And like, yeah, it's really hard to define intelligence.
Target. I made a post about this years ago where I was like, why does a definition have a moving target? That doesn't make any sense. Like you're just moving the goalpost every single time. You're like, well, it needs to do this too in order for it to be whatever. And that was the big complaint I always had, was just, we just keep moving the goalpost, you know?
You bring up the Kano model of what we think of as super intelligence, I think will continue to evolve. Like that watermark around like what we call super or what we call, oh, now that's intelligence, I think will continue to rise naturally. I think just as humans, we have raising expectations over time.
Yeah, we just constant shifting expectations, which is a good thing. You want that, right? But it is hard to measure.
So as we look ahead into 25, because we've done a lot of reflection on 24, as we look ahead into 25, and I'm excited to talk to our guests about this in the new year as well, I love to get into, you know, maybe not speculation, but just how trends we see continue into the new year, I think will really take enterprises to the next level with AI. One of those we talked about, I don't think data quality will go away, that foundational need. And I think the expectation of what our data is able to do to support AI solutions in the future, I think will be super prevalent. I also think about just more that business and the technical collaboration that's so necessary to pick the right solutions that are valuable to the organization, actually get them deployed and iterate on them over time. That consolidation of tools like Salesforce and Epic bring in a lot more AI features too, but love to hear your guys' thoughts around, you know, what we're hearing enterprises are aspiring to do in the new year, what we think they're going to really focus on. Like 24, I guess, comes to mind around setting up AI governance councils, AI centers of excellence, like these AI task force, these AI pillars, these groups that work together cross-collaboratively to support setting what the AI policy is for our organization and prioritizing what use cases are valuable to. Like, that was such a focus across industries in this past year. What do you guys think, looking ahead into the new year, will be something that continues or will be net new that emerges in the enterprise space? Reagan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. So I think a lot of enterprises are coming to the realization that they have risk management structures already set up at their companies today, and they don't need a net new one for AI. They just need to tweak it, augment it, enhance it. Like, they do not need a net new function. Now, there's still AI governance councils and AI committees and all of that stuff, but a lot of it's kind of getting folded into the data efforts as well, because those did stick around for a long time. One of the things I kind of like to do is look at the history of data and the structure of data and data governance and management inside of companies and data strategy. And AI kind of fits within that a little bit. Now, it's a little bit different in the sense that, you know, you have a piece of data that sits in a place and it needs to be managed and quality controlled and whatever. And it's a little bit different than like an intelligent system that needs to be controlled and sit somewhere and run somewhere. But regardless, they're both assets and they're connected and one pulls from the other. And so I do think a lot of organizations are consolidating those efforts, starting to realize they do not need separate, you know, processes and structures for it altogether. They just need to make enhancements. So I think that's going to be another big thing next year, is just the reconsolidation. Like, we spun up all these teams and now it's time to kind of reconsolidate. I think the other one is optimizing. So we gave 800 people Copilot licenses, 20% of them are using it, take away the 80 that aren't, you know, like optimization of costs and where is it not being used and where is it being used and how can we, you know, slowly get it more integrated. So same thing on experimentation for the cloud. Like, we ran a bunch of experiments in Azure. It cost this much. How do we optimize that? Make it cost less. And so I do think there's going to be a tad of like optimization efforts next year. The third one being like getting things to prod faster. So quality control, like, how do we get better solutions developed? Where can we make fundamental improvements and investments to get better solutions? And how do we do this faster? It's just taking way too damn long for a lot of companies to get anything out the door. So
yeah, teams are saying we've set the structure. Now, what is the path to fast track things through that structure? Or like, here's all the requirements we've laid out that we would need to go to production, but then let's scale that back for a POC. Like, let's start to strip away to only what's necessary now that we're more comfortable with the process too. Nice. Brendan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think mine's half a prediction, half a recommendation. But basically, as more people get to production, I think that they'll start realizing that they need to build in more controls, more process, more framework to make sure once it's in production, people will find it valuable and useful and like they'll be able to use it. So I like the Marty Kagan Silicon Valley product group. They had a post about AI product management and they go through the risks, right? Because that's kind of what product management is analyze the risks, mitigate them. They talked about like feasibility. So like, do we have data? Is there a signal in that data? Like, I think a lot of teams are doing that. I think there's viability, which is the governance. Like, can we use data this way? Can we like leverage this without legal issues, without harm, things like that? I think teams are also doing that very well, or they're, you know, have muscle memory in place for that because it's on the way to production.
Yeah.
And then the actual value, once you're in production to the user, that's a really critical risk. Like, are people going to find this useful enough? Is it going to impact the things that we care about strategically or based on our business model? And then of course, usability as well. And I think these types of risks are a lot harder in the enterprise, even with internal users that we know the process well. I think it's just been traditionally with software a hard challenge, and with AI, it's even harder. So my prediction slash recommendation is that people are going to think more from like a design slash product perspective with these, now that they've got the technical roots under them that they can build off of. I think they're going to start realizing once stuff is in prod, you know, these are like the hard lessons you learn in production, right? Like I put it out there, nobody uses it. So we might start getting to those and start thinking through like, how do I build my process? We've seen some teams do this, right? Like business sign-off, business collaboration, demos every other week. Like how do we bring them in kind of like agile with software of like making sure we're building the right thing, not just making sure we can get to production. So I think that might be an interesting piece, especially mid, late next year. The other one I think too, kind of in that similar vein, is this shift from an R&D innovation focus of like, what's the cool thing we can try out? What's the right use case to unlock something new? I think that's really a great place to start for sure. But now we need to shift over to this operating model, the factory model, like take use case, build a good product, put it into production, next one, you know, like kind of moving into that mentality. And that includes a lot more of like a development philosophy, a lot more of a, how do we build the right thing? How do we get it out the door faster? So I think we'll start seeing that shift. And I'm personally super excited because that's what I geek out on. So I'm very stoked for that next year.
Well, especially with how do the underlying data sources change, right? Maybe we point to a specific data source, but then we want to introduce internet as context and then a net new data source. And as we prep data, like it's so evolutionary. And this is something we constantly beat that drum on, is like AI is different from software very much in that way, and that it should be constantly retrained and evolving. Just because we got it into production, it's like high fives around the room, but then it's like, no, now what? Now we got to keep evolving it and retraining it and like nurturing it too. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The evaluation frameworks are also still being shooken out, you know, like a lot of the AI labs, the frontier labs, I think have pretty robust ways of evaluating their systems and are making a lot of progress there. But for that to kind of trickle down into everyone else's ecosystem, I think it's going to take a little bit of time. I know there's a lot of great tools out there that are popping up to help with evaluation frameworks for these systems. But I do think that's going to be the most exciting like paradigm shift, is like once we can actually, you know, actually evaluate this, not only from a testing perspective, but while it's live, and come up with those opportunities to make improvements and figure out where it's underperforming.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many lenses that I think we're really excited about at Align AI around, like once it is production, how many of them meet the standards for model deployment or redeployment? How many of them are aligning to our AI policy that we've set up? How many of them are providing actual value? Like what's the daily active and weekly active usage of the business going to the solution we've deployed? Like all the classic product management stuff. Yeah.
I can't wait till there's like really good non-technical evaluation interpretability. Like putting the power back into the hands of the users and the people who know the domain the best. I think for a long time, even in the machine learning world, you know, evaluation structures have been highly, highly technical, you know, and they're really hard to explain to people who are trying to understand the implications of that on them and their job and their operation that they're managing. That translation piece of, here's where it performs well and here's where it doesn't, here's how it impacts you. I think there's a lot of really exciting work to be done there.
And I think it's deeper than a thumbs up, thumbs down. I feel like that mode is doing a disservice to the end user.
Totally.
Or binary, but like how you get that more rich information. I think that'll be fascinating.
User testing, come on, let's all do it. It'll be so much fun. Sit down, look over the shoulder, have people use it, because they're so probabilistic. I feel like you really got to test pretty hard, because it's not like there's three buttons to click which button, right? It's like you have the English language as an option to input into this thing, what can come back out of it. So I think there'll be some more testing. I think people will also start creating more lockdown interfaces. I think we'll move away from the chatbots and look for like, totally. I used to say Mad Libs, like, you know, drop down here, drop down here, drop down here, something much more integrated in the workflow so you can control it, so you can evaluate it, so you can test it, so you can trust it. Like, I think that might also become more and more prevalent here as we break down how people are using AI to more specific workflows.
Yeah, that's another interesting trend that we should observe over the next couple of years, is the UX paradigm shifts with these systems. I think this is going to sound really bad. I don't mean it to, but the open-ended tools are good and useful for people who have a level of creativity or, you know, a level of vision around what they want, they get the most value out of them because they're open-ended. So like, it's up to you on how good you get at using it. Whereas I do feel like a lot of people who don't have that kind of conviction when they're using the tools or they don't know how to get something good out of it, they really struggle. And they're like, I don't know where to go from here. Like there's no, it's hard because you're kind of, the value is highly correlated with the user. I think it's getting better. Like last year, that was very true. I think it's getting a little bit better over time. But I do think there needs to be more of a guided experience for users to an extent.
Totally. And I think it's going to sober up from being this AI for all, Copilot for everybody, like try and stretch and find who uses it in different ways, but much more of like, hey, let's justify it and let's do this pointed solution for this specific team that's valuable to us and strategic to where we're trying to go as a company, right?
That's why I love the thought of agents, quite honestly.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know the difference between an agent and an ensemble model. I don't know if there is one. I feel like I'm getting to the point now where like agent's the new buzzword, but I'm like, this feels very similar to other things that we've kind of like talked about before. So that's why I'm kind of curious, like if it'll become a very broad term like AI or if it will be more specific term. I'm kind of curious where it goes.
I think the big thing there is when I was looking at a lot of the different agentic frameworks and kind of reading into how the systems are designed and built, it's this like dynamic element of self-improvement, self-awareness, and environmental awareness. That's one piece. So it's more systemic than it is like model-based, if that makes sense. And the ability to action and leverage and create tools. I think those are the two core components that actually create this agent type or agentic system, that there's like some core pieces, like there's a knowledge management element. What do they have access to? Then there's the self-improvement, environmental awareness, like what is changing in the environment that I need to pick up on and adjust to. And then there's, I think it's easiest to think about it in the context of robots too, because, you know, like when a robot is engaging with its environment, it's constantly picking up on additional data through sensors. And then, so that's the environmental awareness and adjustment. So it knows where to go and where to put its hand and whatever. And then the ability to create tools or action is like grabbing something or walking or, you know, actually doing something with itself. So that's how I think about it, if you're thinking more systemic than just like model-based.
Yeah, and I was introduced to it through like Marvin Minsky's book, Society of Mind, which is a great like theory of AI because it kind of decomposes what the brain does. So I think it's really nice because it gives you a very tangible, like, how do you think? Like you want to pick up a block is one of the examples he uses, right? Like there's part of your brain that does like the picking of the block. There's another one that does like the stacking of the block, right? So I think that was really good for me. And it becomes a very like open-ended kind of term in that sense. And then I see like, you know, Crew AI or these like agentic frameworks that folks are using. And it's kind of interesting to think through like what's the atomic unit of an agent? Like what is the right level of decision? Totally. I think it becomes super interesting. And I wonder if it'll become like a more definition inside of there. Cause I know like tools is becoming more of a separate term of like doing an operation elsewhere or like with another system. So I wonder if they'll become even more like kind of fine grained definition. And I love that stuff too. Like the taxonomy of these technologies is so interesting to me.
Well, the layers of abstraction, I think, is what's the like most fascinating to your point. Like, how is that getting, you know, how is that shaken out, basically? And I think it's interesting because you're starting to see the orchestrator. Like now, people are creating these systems where they've got several sub agents that are specifically tasked with something, and then you've got the orchestrator who's orchestrating all of those sub agents. And to your point, like, how do you break down a sub-agent? How do you know which kind of task is good for one thing to do? And then these systems change where they get more broad and generalized. And so, yeah, that whole thing is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, because I come back to like, there's a project we did back in the day, Reagan, is like, you know, a router. Oh, there's a router model that's simple. And then there's three ML models behind it as a REST endpoint. So to be implemented in a agentic framework N number of years ago, or is that like, you know, is that not count because it wasn't NLP with LLM kind of backing? So I think that's where it's kind of interesting to think through. Like, what is that? How broad is that term versus how specific is the term?
And I think the promise of that AI agent for the end user, like the typical person in the business, is just like, again, give me less entry points. Just give me a thing to go to that just solves my problems quickly and I can just get back to work, right? And I think that's maybe where the agent term is really getting picked up on as well, because it feels like that is built into the term agent, like this built-in assistant just go and do much more in-depth pointed work for me as an extension of me.
For sure. No, it'd be really cool if a company was building like a design system for these types of AI solutions.
Listeners, don't tell our competitors. They're gonna listen to our pod and then know.
Keep an eye out. We have some very exciting things coming from Align AI in 2025, not only with the podcast AI or Die, but just what we're doing in supporting large enterprises with their AI initiatives and what they're rolling out too. We want to just thank everybody for an amazing year. We cranked out 10 plus episodes this year. There's going to be many more next year as well too. So thank you to the listeners. Thanks for everybody, all of our guests who joined. Big thank you to you guys as well. We're looking forward to even more exciting guests in the new year too. And just thank you, everybody. Check out this podcast and future podcasts at getalignai.com or wherever you listen to podcasts, and have a happy holiday and a great new year. And we will for sure be doing more episodes in 2025. So watch out for those as well. Reagan, Brendan, any additional closing thoughts for listeners before we go and wrap up today?
2025 is going to be lit.
Super duper lit. It's going to be so totally, absolutely lit.
Cut that.
No.
All right. Thanks, everybody.